Hammer Down Show rolling on. Day after, Purdue's 8-game winning streak comes to a halt as Maryland wins it 70-56 in College Park. Keep those texts rolling, 765-447-4080. I'm sure our next guest can help us figure out what in the world happened last night in College Park. He's Alan Karpik from GoldenBlack.com on the Wings Etc. Hammerhead Hotline. Alan, good afternoon. How are you?
Clayton, the sun is out. It's 25 degrees. I couldn't be better. No, I'm great.
I know. I mean, come on now. This is perfect stuff out here. You kidding me? This is a perfect winter day.
I don't know the difference between West Lafayette and Palm Springs. Do you? I think we're good. No, I'm good. I'm always happy to be on your show and ready to talk some hoops.
Okay, so help us sort this bad boy out last night. What jumped out at you? What happened?
I thought a couple things. One, you got to make – this is the great analysis that you may hang up the phone on me on. When you got to make – in basketball, you have to make baskets. You got to be able to score. And I thought while Purdue during its winning streak did just about everything right at crunch time last night, it was a game of falling down on a couple occasions. Carson Edwards, did some things that was somewhat uncharacteristic, and Purdue just couldn't make shots. Now, I thought Maryland had a lot to do with that. I thought Maryland pushed Purdue around a little bit, but I'm going to take a little more practical, or at least from my perspective, a practical look. It's one loss. You got a huge break that Michigan loses. Now you can look at it and say, well, Purdue missed a great opportunity, but I know Purdue was a 2-point favorite last night, which made me scratch my head to some extent, and it may have been a missed opportunity, but I also look at it and say, you're going to lose games in the Big Ten. We've seen very good Purdue teams lose to a lot worse teams. And so therefore, I think you got to pick up and move on as fast as you can and get ready for a Penn State team that now all of a sudden looks a little more dangerous.
Alan, I mentioned earlier in the show that Carson Edwards took a career high 27 shots.
Right.
In the game last night. Why was he so selfish in the game last night?
Well, I don't know. I think that it depends how you look at it, where he has got trying to make something happen where nobody's making shots. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. And there have been games this year when Purdue's lost where that's right. Anytime you've got more shots taken than points scored, I don't know what his final total was last night, but that's not a good thing. You got to make shots, and he didn't do that. But they were having problems in my view. They're getting pushed out. Aaron Wheeler had a lot of open shots that he made in the first game. If he makes those, it's a very different game, especially at the time that they were coming down. So, I look at Carson and say he's a guy that when he scores in the high 20s and can dish out 6 or 7 assists, he's a first team All-American and makes Purdue a lot better. Last night, it wasn't only him, but it was certainly the whole lot in the second half. Couldn't throw the ball in the ocean, and that was a problem. Even things like Matt Harms, who has played very well and been very good around the basket, shots at the rim that they've been making. Harms had that 7-foot jumper on the right side. He's been making those. He didn't make them, and I think it snowballed on Purdue. And it tends to look worse because your big star shoots 27 times and doesn't hit enough to get you through or get you close down the stretch.
Alan Karpik with us from GoldenBlack.com on the Wings Etc. Hammerhead Hotline.
You know what, Alan, at one point, wouldn't there be a conversation with Coach Painter and Carson Edwards where Coach Painter says, listen, you're done shooting the ball. Drive, dish, run our offense, be the guy that's going to bring this thing back. The other players are counting on you. Is that a conversation that's had and ignored, or is that just not even being said?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't. Stuart, that's a hard thing to speak to. I think that Carson Edwards is a guy that Matt Painter has had to some extent evolve his philosophy of letting the guy go. And I think that you have in that situation, he hits 3 or 4 of those in a row, and we've seen him do it, and things change. And I just don't think he's a guy. I think if we've been watching him for 3 years now, and he's been pretty much the same for 3 years, hard guy to shut the faucet off. And I just don't know how well he reacts in that situation. And we know Carson's pretty passionate dude. And I think that in you're in a situation where you're down, especially in the final, the 4 minute mark where it's 6 points, and all you need is a couple threes. And the guy that's been, has made them, I think it's hard to push back against that terribly. And I think, I don't know, can't speak to the whole relationship that they have. I do know that Matt Painter has been able to bend a lot to having a guy like Carson around because he's a different type of talent. And yes, we've seen games this year where he's shot a lot of times and hasn't made as many as he should, and Purdue's lost. That may be the formula that at the end of the day, you got to find a way to win in that situation. There wasn't anybody else making shots either.
Well, one thing me and Clayton were talking about, you spoke on Aaron Wheeler. At what point do you tell yourself, I'm done shooting?
I don't think Carson Edwards, Stewart, I think it's like you playing defensive back and saying that you can, I mean, Carson Edwards is never going to tell himself he's done shooting. And I think people think that they want him to do that. Now, Wheeler may be in a different boat, but I think that's Carson, and I'm not saying I always agree with it. I'm saying that's his mentality. And it's the next shot. Now, selection, and there's no doubt Matt Painter said after the game, choice was not good last night. I'm not saying that all his shots were good shots. I'm saying he's going to shoot them, and you better hope. I think Purdue has been, we've seen him when the Purdue has been at his best, has been where he's made a little bit higher percentage, but also has been able to find other guys for open looks. Now, he had other guys for open looks in a couple of situations last night, and they missed them. So, again, it all looks bad when you shoot 18%, you're not going to beat in the second half against a quality basketball team. You're just not going to win. And yes, part of that had to do with shot selection at certain parts of that, when things were going south on Purdue. But I just found like, I didn't feel like that was the whole story last night.
Alan Karpik with us from goldenblack.com on the Wings, etc. Hammerhead Hotline. How concerned are you about this team's composure? I mean, it was a roller coaster ride at Wisconsin. It was a roller coaster ride at Ohio State and Penn State, and this team didn't hold up very well, last night. Now, IU's coming up on Tuesday. There's other road games here over the next several weeks. What about this team's composure right now?
Well, I think it's, like anything else, I think I used to say college football is a week to week proposition. I'll say basketballs can be a game to game. You can look at them both ways. One, that they got through those games against Ohio State and Penn State, which are lesser talent certainly than what we saw in Maryland yesterday, especially that freshman group. It's a concern because you've got to do it in crunch time. Anybody thinks that going to Bloomington will be a walk in the park, even if Purdue had won yesterday, they're high as a kite. I mean, it will be a difficult game. Purdue will have to keep its composure enough to win. I think they have hit shots at the right time for the most part. That's why they've won these games. And I think that's a good thing. It just didn't happen last night. But, yeah, I think when you have guys that when you rely on the three as much as Purdue does and have a volume score in Carson Edwards that we've seen has been very, very good, and we've seen where he hasn't been at times, and that maybe less times than when he's been good, that's always a concern. But you also don't want to, Purdue did not have a lot of turnovers, but they had a couple ones that defied logic at certain times. And Purdue's been pretty good with the basketball, but these are all factors. It's the Big Ten, fellas. You know that, and you better lace it up. You better lace it up for Northwestern. You better lace it up for Nebraska. You better lace it up for Minnesota, and certainly for Indiana, or you lose them all. And it's funny because every team I've watched, I say, "Oh, Northwestern's not any good." Then I watch them go and lead Iowa by 15 points. I know they lost the game.
Right.
Anybody can beat you in this, and that's where. I think that the rub is Purdue heads down the stretch here.
Well, Alan, one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show was to get your expertise and input. Some of these fans are wondering if Grady Eifert is the best walk-on to ever play at Purdue, and I think you've got some good information on that.
Well, and God love Grady Eifert. He's still, even yesterday, I know that he missed some threes and didn't play, didn't make shots, so he didn't have as great of a stat line. But still, I don't know I've watched anybody at Purdue in all my years of watching that just can go into a pile and get the basketball. I mean, it's just amazing. And he did that a couple times last night, or keeps possessions alive, things that absolutely don't count on the scores, you know, deflections or whatever. And I know this has been well documented and talked about, but even last night in a loss, that kid's effort is unbelievable. In terms of walk-ons, you know, I think it's because Grady and a guy named Jim Rowinski and Clayton well, you guys both have heard the name before, but Jim Rowinski was a guy that you know, if you look at walk-ons that have actually been starters for an entire season, that's the only two that since Mackey Arena has been open. We did a little bit of research on that and put it on our website yesterday. You know, Bobby Riddell and Andrew Ford all got a fair number of starts in the 2000s. Bobby, I think, had 15 or so, and was certainly a very good walk-on and contributed. Chad Kirkhoff, late 1990s, did not get many starts, but played a fair amount, especially on the team in 2000 that went to the Elite Eight. He was in the rotation with that team. But certainly Eifert and Rowinski, and of course Rowinski is still one of the great stories in Big Ten basketball history. I mean, here's a guy comes in at 6'8", 197, and leaves 6'8", 245, and with the Big Ten's most valuable player. I don't know if there's ever been another walk-on that's won has won the Big Ten MVP and as Jim Rowinski has done. But Grady Eifert is right there, is number two in my list, and that's not damning Grady Eifert. It's just that Jim Rowinski's story is so amazing. You have to be an old man like me to remember it, but he was unbelievable to go from where he went to the Big Ten MVP in 1984 and Gene Katie's first Big Ten championship team.
And I liked your backstory you had there, Alan, about Rowinski, and he answered some questions about kind of how he got to Purdue and all of that. So did he, because he was talking about how he had, you know, family ties to want to go to Purdue, so then did he go to Coach Rose and say, hey, I want to play, or did Rose know about him and say, hey, do you want to try out? How did that connection get made there?
You know, and I was a basketball manager. That would have been my sophomore year. And Lee Rose had a Renegade squad. And they had little white shirts with blue numbers. And the number on them was the score Indiana State had, and Larry Bird had beaten Purdue, I think, by 30 or 29. And they all had number 30, a blue 30 on their jerseys to remind the starters of what had happened the year before. I don't think, and somebody asked me this question yesterday, I think Rowinski had a tie with somebody in basketball, but he had to try out like the rest of them on this Renegade squad of which Lee Rose has. And then when Gene Katie came the next year, he basically said, hey, Jim, you know, you impressed us. And there were enough people that were still around that said, you know, you got to give this guy a look. And Gene did. And Rowinski was still a pretty deep on the walk-on list in 1980-81. In fact, that was really his first year of eligibility. But then in 81-82, you know, his first college start, he went head-to-head with Hakeem Olajuwon at Houston. But it's just an amazing story, and the fact that this is a guy that not only grew up right in front of your eyes, but worked so hard at his game and became a guy that could not only lead a team to a Big Ten championship, but also, you know, have a chance to be the Big Ten MVP.
Yep, great stuff, no doubt about it. Alan, thanks so much for the time and all the info. Always great to catch up with you, and enjoy the rest of the week.
All right, guys, have a great rest of the show. Thank you.
Alan Karbick from GoldenBlack.com. When we come back, we're going to answer some of the texts. Got an email, too. A lot of folks fired up today about this ball game from last night. We'll do all that next on the Hammer Down.